Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Puri Vraja Gacharja Ashtotra Shatashishivad. His Divine Grace Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaura Premanandi. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Sudevaya. Which verse is on the board? Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 11, text 7. Tavannayam yavahara sadavihi. Kshetragya saksho bhavati stula sukshmaha. Tasman manolingam adovadanti. Guna gunatvasya paravarasya. Tricky thing about Sanskrit is short A's are super short and long A's are super long, and never shall the twain meet, which English is not, or other European languages, so it requires some concentration, plus keeping the right meter while you're at it. It's not a trivial endeavor. Tavannayam yavahara sadavihi. Kshetragya saksho bhavati stula sukshmaha. Tasman manolingam adovadanti. Guna gunatvasya paravarasya. Any brave souls want to chant? Kshetragya saksho bhavati stula sukshmaha. Tasman manolingam adovadanti. Unatvasya paravarasya. Prodigies. Until that time, ayam, this, Vyavahara. The artificial designations, being fat or skinny or belonging to the demigods or human beings. Sada, always, avihi, manifesting, kshetragya, of the living entity, sakshaha, testimony, bhavati, is, stula sukshmaha, fat and skinny, tasmat, therefore, manaha, the mind, lingam, the cause, adaha, this, vedanti, they say, guna agunatvasya, of being absorbed in the material qualities, or devoid of material qualities, para avarasya, and of lower and higher conditions of life. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. The mind makes the living entity within this material world wander through different species of life, and thus the living entity experiences mundane affairs in different forms as a human being, demigod, fat person, skinny person, and so forth. Learned scholars say that bodily appearance, bondage, and liberation are caused by the mind. Purport, just as the mind is the cause of bondage, it can also be the cause of liberation. The mind is described here as para avara. Para means transcendental, and avara means material. When the mind is engaged in the Lord's service, Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo, it is called para, transcendental. When the mind is engaged in material sense gratification, it is called avara, or material. At the present moment, in our conditioned state, our mind is fully absorbed in material sense gratification, but it can be purified and brought to its original Krishna consciousness by the process of devotional service. We've often given the example of Ambarish Maharaj, Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayor Vachamsi Vaikunta Gunana Varnane. The mind must be controlled in Krishna consciousness. The tongue can be utilized to spread the message of Krishna and glorify the Lord or take prasad, the remnants of food offered to Krishna. Sevan Mukhehi Jivado. When one utilizes the tongue in the service of the Lord, the other senses can become purified. As stated in the Narada Pancharatra, Sarvabhati Vinir Muktam Tatparat Vena Nirmalam, when the mind and senses are purified, one's total existence is purified, and one's designations are also purified. One no longer considers himself a human being, a demigod, cat, dog, Hindu, Muslim, and so forth. When the senses and mind are purified and one is fully engaged in Krishna's service, one can be liberated and return home, back to Godhead. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjala Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is one of those classic verses about the mind. In the last 2 months I've been here, most of the verses have dealt with this subject again and again. And again and again it's being described how the designations of the mind bewilder the living entity, because the pure living entity, the Atma or soul, has chosen to give power of attorney to the mind. So really the mind is what's in charge. The soul is supposed to be in charge, but he's given up his power of being in charge and allows the mind to dictate how things should operate. And the mind runs according to the three modes, so naturally that keeps one bound in the material existence. And this goes on until you get tired of it, that's all. It'll go on for, there's no limit actually, it can go on forever, literally. Whenever Mahavishnu inhales at the end of the Dvi Prarada, in another 150 trillion years from now, when Mahavishnu inhales, if you still are in the program of giving power of attorney to your mind, then you are inhaled into the body of Mahavishnu, where you remain in a dormant state until the Lord Mahavishnu exhales again. When he exhales, all the universes come out and the whole material cosmos comes into existence and remains until he inhales again, the entire cycle taking about 311 trillion years. So Krishna is very cool and relaxed. He never forces anyone. You can stay literally as long as you want. But because we are spirit souls, and Vedanta Sutta describes as anandamaya vyasat, that means pleasure seekers. The Lord is a pleasure seeker, and the living entities are pleasure seekers. We are not satisfied with pleasures that reach a beginning and have an end, which have a beginning, reach a peak, and then have an end. We are not satisfied with that, because that's not part of the soul's nature. The soul's nature is to experience ever-increasing happiness. But ever-increasing happiness is only available when we surrender to the will of Krishna, when we agree to render pure devotional service to Krishna. And if we actually render pure devotional service to Krishna, then we are eligible to experience ever-increasing, literally ever-increasing happiness. It's described in Adi Lila chapter 4 of Chaitanya Charitamrita that the gopis and Krishna, and Krishna and the gopas and all the pure devotees of Vrindavan are exchanging transcendental loving relationships. And this pleasure simply gets better and better each day. It gets higher and higher and higher. Although it seems already that it's so high, it can't get any higher. The ecstasy that the devotees are experiencing in pure love of God in Goloka Vrindavan is so intense, it's so unlimited, that everyone is thinking, this, it's already must have reached the peak. How can it possibly get greater than this? But it does get greater, because the nature of spiritual energy is to expand continuously. It's ever expanding, ever increasing. And the nature of the material energy is to reach a peak and then decline. So this, within 5 minutes, we've now analyzed the whole situation and understood that there's no value in the material energy. The only value is in the spiritual energy. So if we run full speed towards Krishna by the sadhana bhakti process, then very quickly we can become advanced. Within a few years, actually, anyone who works intensely for the mission of the Lord becomes advanced within a few years. And then we can actually experience what's being described in Chaitanya Charitamrita and the other Vaishnav scriptures. Namely, the devotees are experiencing so much happiness. In fact, sometimes they have to pray to reduce the happiness. They pray to Krishna, it's too much happiness. Srila Prabhupada gives an example in the Nectar of Devotion, which is a summary study of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that Dwarka, and this is Dwarka Lila, it's not even Goloka Vrindavan, which is the highest. It's Dwarka Lila. In Dwarka Lila, there's a pure devotee named Dwarka, and he's a servant of Krishna. He arranges Krishna's chariot when Krishna wants to go to the Sudharma assembly house. Every morning Krishna comes out, 16,108 Krishnas come out of 16,108 palaces, and they all merge into one form of Krishna. So if you have the urge to merge, here is the proper merging. You can meditate on this kind of merging instead of the idea to become one with God. So 16,108 forms come out of 16,108 different palaces and all combine into one form of Krishna. And waiting there propitiously and efficiently is Dwarka, a pure devotee of the Lord who has no thought except to please the Lord by serving him, by arranging his chariot. So Dwarka drives Krishna to the Sudharma assembly house, which was given by the demigods. Dwarka is no ordinary city. When the demigods heard that Krishna wanted to construct a city for his own pleasure pastimes, all the different demigods came and gave various gifts for the construction. So this Sudharma assembly house is not an ordinary place. It's described that anyone who takes part in meetings in the Sudharma assembly house is free from old age, disease, invalidity, hunger, and thirst. Also, when Lord Ramchandra departed from this world, he took all living entities in Ayodhya back with him to the spiritual world. And Krishna also liberated all living entities in the universe along with Lord Chaitanya. So at least three forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead took everyone back to Godhead when they departed, when they finished the Leelas. Not only Lord Chaitanya, interestingly enough, but it's described that Krishna also took all living entities in the universe back to Godhead. This is simply causeless mercy. Krishna just has a causelessly merciful nature. He's always trying to give mercy to the conditioned souls. So sometimes that mercy overflows in the form of just taking everyone back to Godhead. That's Krishna's option. He can do all that. He can, even without sadhana, he can do that. Generally speaking, when he wants to do that, he comes in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Each form of the Lord manifests a certain personality or aspect of the Lord. When the Lord likes to fight, he comes as Ramchandra or Parashuram or Lord Nrisimhadev. These are forms of the Lord who enjoy a good fight. And the pure devotees, they come to give a good fight. The Lord actually only fights with his devotees, generally speaking. I mean, sometimes there are demons who have to be taken out, but the really long and detailed and intense battles, the Lord always selects a pure devotee to give him that pleasure. Or the devotee volunteers even to become a demon, amazingly enough, just to please the Lord. So the Lord is so amazing that when he gets in the mood of anger, a whole form manifests. When we get angry, maybe our skin color changes a little bit. Our voice changes a little bit. There's some minor changes, but not a whole new form manifests. We don't have that kind of potency. But when Krishna gets in a certain mood, then a whole new form with Leelas, and Lord Nrisimhadev has his own planet, Leelas, devotees, everything manifests. This is such is the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the mood of audarya or mercy, that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's attribute. So when Krishna gets in that mood of unbounded mercy, boundless mercy, then he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if anyone is more merciful than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's Nityananda. Nityananda delivered even those who were rejected by Lord Chaitanya. And when Gaur and Nitai are together, they do amazing things. Like they were traveling to Shantipur to see Advaita Acharya. Because Advaita Acharya had taken to his last resort to prove to the world that he was the servant instead of the master. Advaita always wanted to be recognized as the servant of Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya always glorified him because he was on the level of his spiritual master. He was a godbrother of Ishvara Puri. So Advaita Acharya tried everything. And the last resort that he knew would always work, how to get chastised in three easy lessons, is to teach Mayavadi philosophy. That's guaranteed to do the trick. Because when Advaita Acharya knew, when I teach Mayavad philosophy, Lord Chaitanya will drag me down from my Vyasasana where I'm giving a lecture and beat me up in front of everyone. And thus he will prove to the world that I am his servant. And this was his goal. So he arranged this. Advaita Acharya, he jubilantly began his plot. Advaita is one of the greatest of all Vaishnavas. He's Lord Shiva or Mahavishnu. The glance of Mahavishnu is Sadashiva. So it's not a contradiction. Sometimes we hear that Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu, or sometimes we hear that he is Sadashiva. There's no difference. The Sadashiva is the glance of Mahavishnu, and he resides outside of all the universes, and then Sadashiva expands into the individual Shambhu or Shiva in each material universe. So Lord Shiva is very special. He's almost on the level of Vishnu. He's far superior to an ordinary Jiva, and his devotion is also on the highest caliber. So Advaita Acharya thought, now I shall teach Mayavad philosophy. And one time he began talking to Haridas Thakur. He said, actually, the process of jnana is superior in all respects to the process of bhakti. This bhakti is kid stuff. The real thing is jnana, impersonal realization, merging, the urge to merge. Advaita said it with all seriousness, but Haridas Thakur began laughing uproariously. Because he, being a pure devotee, he is highly intelligent and he understood what Advaitacharya was trying to do. So Advaita, he set up shop, he set up his Vyasasan in Shantipur and began lecturing to all kinds of unfortunate, foolish people who took it seriously. And Nityananda and Gauranga were touring through Navadvip, and Gauranga, Lord Chaitanya is omniscient, of course. So he said, he turned to Nityananda and said, Advaita is teaching Mayavad philosophy. I must chastise him severely. So they said, okay, let's go to Shantipur. So Nityananda and Advaita began walking like two lions. when they wanted to walk quickly, no one could keep up with them. Chaitanya and Nityananda. So as they were going along, they came to the house of one tantric sannyasi. A tantric sannyasi is one who's to use the word sannyas along with tantric is an oxymoron. That's the term. It's an incompatible juxtaposition of terms, because this sannyasi had a wife, so-called sannyasi. He had a wife. He drank wine and did everything in violation of the strict principles of sannyas. But he didn't offend Vaishnavas. This is interesting. He was not a nindika. He did not offend the Vaishnavas. So Lord Nityananda and Gauranga came to his house. And when they came, he said, oh, so nice that you have come to my house. I have some bliss. And Lord Chaitanya said, what is this? He looked at Nityananda, what is this bliss? And Nityananda, being worldly wise, wise to the ways of the world, says, he means wine. So the so-called sannyasi sat down, Nityananda and Gauranga said, let me bring some bliss. We can all enjoy together. And while he was saying this, the sannyasi's wife, so-called sannyasi's wife, came and began looking lustfully at Nityananda and Gauranga. So Lord Chaitanya said, thank you very much, Swamiji. I have to go now. So they ran and jumped in the Ganga and swam the rest of the way down to Shantipur. But actually, Vrindavan Das Thakur describes in this pastime that this sannyasi will get the mercy of the Lord in a future birth. In this birth, he was too fallen to take to the process of devotional service, but in a next birth, he will actually get devotional service, because the Supreme Lord, in his most munificent aspect, came to his house and actually conversed with him. Whereas those who are so-called sannyasis, I mean strict sannyasis, but are actually blasphemers of Vaishnavas, for them they will have to suffer many lifetimes in the material world. Indeed, Vrindavan Das Thakur says that an assembly of perfect brahmacharis or sannyasis who are austere and strictly following all the rules but who offend Vaishnavas is more irreligious than an assembly of drunkards. So to be a drunkard is superior, because there's some hope, actually. Indeed, Narottam Das Thakur says, Mo sama patita prabhu na pai be ara. I'm first in line. Since your program is to give mercy to the most fallen, then I'm here. I'm first in line. See, you're actually not disqualified by having material desires, but you are disqualified if you offend Vaishnavas. This is the message given again and again by Vrindavan Das Thakur. So Gaur and Nitai, they swam down the Ganga to Shantipur, and they came out on the bank, and there they found Advaitacharya happily lecturing. So Lord Chaitanya came to the assembly in a very angry mood, and he said, Advaita, which is superior, jnana or bhakti? So Advaita said, with all gravity, he said, in every respect and at all times, jnana is superior to bhakti. So Lord Chaitanya became furious and grabbed him down from the vyasa. He was sitting up on an exalted seat, and Lord Chaitanya pulled him down on the ground and began beating him with his fist right in front of the whole assembly. And Sita Thakurani, the wife of Advaitacharya, was crying, he's an old man, do you want to kill him? You're going to kill him. Advaita was in ecstasy. He was just jubilant. He was jumping and dancing and feeling complete. And he shouted out loudly, now you've proven to the world that I'm your servant and you're my master. And Lord Chaitanya was also, he was very happy, because he knew everything internally. This is all one of the amazing pastimes of the Lord. But it showed how Advaitacharya, even though so exalted and even though respected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually wanted to be the servant of the Lord. That was his highest aspiration, is simply to be the servant of the Lord. And it's described by the great Vaishnav Acharyas that all the Vishnu Tattva forms of the Lord are actually very eager to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. Even though they have unlimited power, they're plenary expansions of the Lord. They want to render service, they want to give happiness to the Supreme Lord Krishna himself. In fact, there's a pastime at the end of the Krishna book where Lord Vishnu abandoned his normal policy of worshipping Brahmins and providing all benefits for Brahmins, because we know in the third canto there's an amazing statement when Jai and Vijay are cursed by the four Kumaras and Lord Narayan appears there. He told the four Kumaras, if my arm is offensive to Vaishnavas, I will not hesitate to lop off my own arm, to cut off my own arm. It's described there, third canto, chapter 16 or 17, 17. So the Lord there, and the Lord speaks a number of interesting verses where he says that the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are my life and soul, they're my very heart. So I always want to provide all comforts, all facilities for Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and everyone should respect Vaishnavas because even I want to serve them. So that's Lord Vishnu's standard policy. But in the 10th canto, we find that he was so eager to see Krishna that he abandoned his normal policy and actually put a Brahmin into great difficulty by stealing his sons. Just as they were born, he stole one after another 10 sons in a row. And the Brahmin was completely fried. He kept coming to Ugrasena, the king of Dwarka, and saying that you must be unqualified, you're not even a real Kshatriya. You're envious, you're unqualified. He began saying very heavy things, actually. So Arjuna wanted to defend the Kshatriya reputation, because Ugrasena was actually a highly qualified person. He was the grandfather of Krishna. So Arjuna wanted to recover the sons of the Brahmin, but he couldn't do so. And he had vowed that if he couldn't recover them, he would hurl himself into blazing fire. So just as he was about to do that, Krishna restrained him, because Krishna knew that it was actually Mahavishnu who had stolen the sons of the Brahmin and made a difficult arrangement that the only way they could be recovered is if Krishna himself came personally to recover them. And when Krishna and Arjuna did that, they went through the coverings of the universe and went to see Lord Mahavishnu. They went into the Karana Jal, the spiritual water that's outside of each of the individual material universes. And they saw Lord Mahavishnu in a huge effulgent palace in the Karana Jal, the causal ocean. And they went there, and Krishna offered obeisances and Arjuna offered obeisances to Lord Mahavishnu. And then Mahavishnu revealed it was all his trick. He had arranged the entire thing simply because he wanted to see Krishna. So all the Vishnu Tattva forms of the Lord, they actually want to see Krishna. They're so eager to see Krishna because Krishna is all attractive. We also find that the great Acharyas have informed us that when Lord Narayan is performing his pastimes in Vaikuntha, and all of his devotees are glorifying him, sometimes he shouts out in ecstasy, Krishna Balaram ki. He's actually spying on Krishna and Balaram in Goloka Vrindavan, Lord Narayan, while he's sitting there hearing the reverential hymns of the Vedas, because that's what's going on in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means awe and reverence, worship of the Supreme Lord in awe and reverence. And it's actually the default mode for most religions. For example, Christianity has the conception of God being worshipped in majesty and supremacy. He sits on a throne and is being worshipped in awe and reverence. That's the natural conception that human beings on this planet have of how you would worship God, because God is unlimitedly powerful. And also the Muslims with Allah, even though they may not have a form, they may not believe that Allah has a form, but still, he is the supreme and everyone is his humble servant offering reverential prayers. So that aspect of Godhead does definitely exist. That's the Vaikuntha mood in Shantaras. In Shantaras, one worships the Lord in great awe and reverence. One is just meditating on how inconceivably powerful and opulent the Lord is, how he controls everything throughout all of existence, how he exists within every atom, is totally omniscient and controls everything. So some people those who are in Shantaras, they really enjoy this. They get into this mood very intensely, just meditating on the glories of the Lord. But that, for Vaishnavas, that's considered the lowest of the five rasas. Next is dasya. There's also some dasya in Vaikuntha, servitude, wanting to render service to the Lord. But the sakya mood of friendship is not present in Vaikuntha. The sakya mood that we've discussed many times in Goloka Vrindavan, where the coward boys climb on Krishna's shoulders and declare that he's not so powerful after all, that mood is not present in Vaikuntha. So in Vaikuntha, the Lord is receiving the kind of worship that the residents like to give, because the Lord is so loving. Lord Narayan and Lord Krishna, they're so loving that whatever mood you have, however you want to worship them, they reciprocate in that mood. So if you want to worship them in this awe and reverence style, then the Lord is so merciful, he accepts that. So Lord Narayan is sitting there on the throne, and everyone is singing his glories. There's uncountable living entities, pure living entities. It's entirely spiritual, it's not material. They're offering reverential hymns in worship. And while that's going on, the Lord is expert at multitasking, to put it mildly. He's conscious of everything simultaneously without becoming bewildered. So he's listening to all these reverential prayers, but simultaneously he's spying on Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. So when Krishna and Balaram do something amazing, which is all the time, literally constantly, so then Lord Narayan, sometimes he forgets himself and he springs up from his throne and raises his long arms above his head, all four long arms. He raises up and he loudly shouts, Krishna Balaram Ki! But the Vaikuntha residents, they don't know what's going on. This is very mysterious. What is our Lord doing? Oh, anyway, he's glorious. Then they go on glorifying him again. It's described, there's a pastime where in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram decide to put on a musical concert for the cowherd boys. This is described in a book called Venu Gita by Shivaram Raj, who quotes his sources in great detail, Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Sridhar Maharaj, and especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who gives extensive commentaries on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's an entire volume where it's now published, it's available. It's the Jai Jagannath Prabhu has the book. It's Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's detailed commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is one of the most prolific commentators on the Bhagavatam, and he gives wonderful pastimes. And in this pastime, Krishna and Balaram go off into the forest with the cowherd boys, which they do every day. And Krishna says to all the cowherd boys, now I know you have a desire to hear a musical concert. So I want to, it's always my desire to fulfill your desires. So he has Ujjvala. Ujjvala arranges the stage. He's one cowherd boy. Each one of these cowherd boys is possessed of unlimited ecstatic love of God. One can just entirely meditate very deeply on all of their activities and moods and pastimes. So Ujjvala, he has a kind of, he's like a master of ceremonies. He arranges the stage, which is basically just a piece of the forest. He arranges the stage and all the animals come, because of course the animals are fully conscious. They're pure devotees. They're not like animals. They're like far more intelligent than human beings, especially on this planet at this time. Because they've understood that pure devotional service is where it's at. And they're totally fixed. They're spotlessly pure devotees. They're brilliant. They can offer learned prayers, all kinds of shlokas, or they can insult Krishna in a clever fashion for his pleasure, using word jugglery. They're all brilliant. All the deer, all the animals there, the chipmunks, All creatures there are pure devotees. They're learned in all shastras and Vedic knowledge, and they're equipped with the highest ecstatic love of God. So they all assemble. As soon as everyone hears that Krishna is going to put on a concert, all the forest animals come, the deer and everyone else, and all the coward boys are sitting there. They're spellbound. They're mesmerized. So Krishna and Balaram, first they bow to each other, they offer pranams to the audience, and then they begin their devastating dance. Krishna and Balaram are performing very intricate dance maneuvers, and they're playing their flutes at the same time, putting on an incredible concert with acting out various mudras and moods and scenes, and it's inconceivable, actually. Because of my bad memory, I can't remember all the details. Maybe I'll bring that book next time to class, next time I give class. It's an amazing pastime. So in the course of their dance performance, Krishna starts doing cartwheels around Balaram. Balaram's in the middle, doing an incredibly intricate dance. So Krishna starts doing cartwheels, but he's doing cartwheels in such a way that he's circumambulating Balaram and playing his flute at the same time. And then he reaches out and takes the dust from Lord Balaram's feet and offers it to the audience while playing his flute and doing cartwheels all at the same time. Prabhupada said, impossible is the word found in the fool's dictionary, because Krishna can do literally anything. And sometimes Krishna does the most amazing things. I mean, actually all the time. Why only sometimes? He's Krishna. So when Krishna offers the dust of Balaram's lotus feet to the assembled Vaishnavs, to the coward boys and everyone else, while doing the cartwheels and playing his flute, everyone is just, they're totally enchanted. They just start crying in ecstasy. And they began glorifying. They say, Krishna and Balaram are so amazing. No one can dance like Krishna and Balaram. Who can do that? Who can even dream of doing this? And then, while this is at the apex of the pastime, then in Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan, who's been spying on the pastime, Lord Narayan springs up from his throne, raises his long arms in ecstasy and shouts out, Krishna Balaram ki! But the people in Vaikuntha, they don't know what's going on. Well, this is very mysterious. What is actually happening? So these are among the wonderful and beautiful leelas. And the power of these leelas is they will conquer our heart. They will attract us away from the material energy and turn us into pure devotees. Again and again, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami says at the end of each of the leelas of Chaitanya Charitamrita, that by hearing, simply by hearing the pastime, you become a pure devotee. This is the most efficacious process, hearing with right attitude, with right consciousness, with service attitude, with a desire to love Krishna, to awaken our love for Krishna. Hearing in proper consciousness is the most powerful process of devotional service. Shravanam, it's the first of the Nava Anga, or nine limbs of bhakti. And it is sufficient in itself. If you can properly hear, that is sufficient in itself. But because we're not so advanced, we do many other activities. And these other activities we do, like worshipping the deity and distributing books or cleaning the temple room, these things are building up our adhikara, our qualification, so the next time we hear pastimes, we can go more deeply into the pastimes. Everything we're doing is intended to bring us to the stage of pure devotional service. So thank you very much. Are there any questions or corrections?
Thank you. You mentioned hearing Shravanam is the most important. Sometimes I feel like I've heard that chanting the holy name is the most important.
While chanting, one also hears. While chanting, one is hearing the holy name. And chanting also benefits others. So that is extremely powerful. The combination, Shravanam, Kirtanam, together, hearing and chanting. Prabhupada was so liberal, he even considered that the mantras you use on book distribution to try to convince someone to take a book, that's also hearing and chanting. Prabhupada said, we should always be hearing and chanting. And then one devotee said, but what about, I'm trying to tell someone about buying one of your books. Prabhupada said, this is also hearing and chanting. This is just as good as the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although he said that anyone who does not chant 64 rounds a day is fallen, he allowed for his preachers to chant only 16 rounds a day. preaching is so valuable, so vitally important, and so effective for elevating your own consciousness, what to speak of the only way to help others to become Krishna conscious, that even the normal rule of 64 rounds, if you're not a preacher, you should chant 64 rounds a day, actually. Prabhupada, actually, when he came to New York, after he gave first initiation to the first set of devotees, Steve became Satsarup, Bruce became Ramananda, Greg became Gargamuni, his very first Wali became Umapati. These very first devotees, Satsarup Maharaj was Steve before he was initiated. So he was there. They took initiation. They didn't really know what initiation was all about. This is kind of Leela Amrita. What is initiation? Oh, well, anyway, it's something we're supposed to do. Then afterwards, Prabhupada said, now everyone is going to chant 64 rounds. 64 rounds, Prabhupada, we can't chant 64 rounds. So they struggled and tried for a couple of days. Then Prabhupada said, all right, 32 rounds. So 32 rounds was also impossible for them. And Prabhupada said, 16 rounds minimum. Bare minimum is 16 rounds to join the human race. Because with less than 16 rounds, our mind is conquered by the illusory energy. 16 rounds actually purifies the heart to the extent that we're no longer controlled by the external energy and we can begin to engage in the activities of the internal energy, the rendering of devotional service. And even those, of course, Mother Yashoda, she doesn't chant rounds, but she's just so much in love with Krishna, she's constantly chanting Krishna's glories and pastimes. So really, rigidly imposed quota of chanting is for persons who have no taste for chanting but want to develop the taste and want to be elevated to the stage of pure devotion. And when you're actually pure, then you'll chant anyway, because chanting is itself the supreme goal. One time a devotee asked Prabhupada, what will we get from this chanting? Prabhupada said, more chanting. Because one is always thinking, well, this a neophyte is thinking, the chanting is a process so I can do something else later on. The result of chanting is it awakens all forms of devotional service. The great acharyas, such as Jiva Goswami, inform us that by chanting, we get purified so we can engage in other forms of devotional service, but the result of becoming advanced in the chanting process is you develop a tremendous desire to just chant more. So you're actually chanting all the time. It's a healthy symptom if you hear a brahmachari in the shower loudly singing the Hare Krishna mantra to his favorite melody. I always feel happy when I hear someone chanting in the shower, singing, because you don't have to. He wants to chant. He's got the taste. This is the whole goal, is to get so much taste that we want to always chant. Kirtaniya Sada Hari. Sada means always. Why 16 rounds? That's the bare minimum. Of course, we have many duties we have to perform in regard to giving Krishna consciousness to others. So, but there are many times when we can chant. We have some free time for chanting, or an ekadasi, we can chant. So many opportunities for chanting.
Since we have a few minutes, if anything comes to mind, Prabhu, could you share a few glories of the holy name? You have been sharing glories of the holy name and the process of chanting, but I always find that hearing the glories of something makes me more attracted. Could you share some? You have something? Glories of the holy name?
There's so many pastimes.
Something. Shlokas are a pastime. Anything that comes to mind, Prabhu?
There's so many glorifications of the Lord's holy name. Actually, Rupa Goswami wrote what the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered the sweetest glorification. Even Haridas Thakur had heard so many glorifications when Rupa Goswami recited this verse in the beginning of Ancha Lila. He said, although I've heard so many wonderful glorifications of the Lord's holy name, I've never heard one as wonderful as this. So this verse goes, I do not know how much nectar has been produced by the two syllables Krishna. When we chant the holy name, we desire to have millions of tongues. What use is one tongue? We need millions of tongues to relish the chanting of the Lord's holy name. And when the holy name enters the ears, we desire millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the senses and renders the mind totally absorbed in this loving pastimes of the Lord. So this is Rupa Goswami's glorification of the Lord. And he knows, he's not an outsider, he's expert. The Goswamis are our topmost connoisseurs of spiritual nectar. Rupa Goswami is actually Rupa Manjari, one of the intimate serving maids of Srimati Radharani in Goloka Vrindavan. Under the divine order of Radha and Krishna, Rupa Manjari came to this world to preach as Rupa Goswami. And in fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, we are all Rupanugas. Prabhupada also said that we're all followers. Anuga means follower. We're all followers of Rupa Goswami. And in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's pranam, the prayer glorifying him, his pranam prayer, it said that he was expert at identifying all things that were other than Rupa Goswami's philosophy, all deviations from that philosophy. So apasampradayak deviations from Rupa Goswami's pure teachings, because devotional service is very confidential and very erudite, and it's very easy to get off track. As Prabhupada said, it's like a razor's edge. So if we're not very attentive, we can easily get off track. And there are creepers that look like the bhakti lata creeper, but are not actually the pure creeper. And as neophytes, we can become bewildered. So Rupa Goswami, that's why Rupa Goswami gave nectar of devotion and nectar of instruction. So his verse glorifying the holy name is described as the sweetest, even by Haridas Thakur himself, who is the Nama Acharya. And regarding pastimes, in Antilila chapter 3, the efficacy of the Lord's holy name was proven on two occasions. Why just two? But two outstanding occasions. When a prostitute came to make Haridas Thakur fall down, a very attractive young girl was sent by an envious rascal named Ramchandra Khan, who couldn't tolerate that Haridas Thakur was being glorified. He was an envious rascal. First, he tried to search out faults in the character of Haridas Thakur. And after analyzing scrutinizingly, he was the original fault finder. He's the king of fault finders, this Ramchandra Khan. So after scrutinizingly analyzing the personality of Haridas Thakur, he couldn't find any fault. So he thought, I must create a fault. How to create a fault? Ah, he's an renunciate. I know what I'll do. I'll bring in the apsaras, at least the mundane versions, the Marchaloka versions of apsaras, as best as we can get on this planet. So he rounded them up. And out of them, one very enlivened and powerful prostitute was selected. She said, she was very fired up for the job. This is in Anshula chapter 3. She said, I will attract the mind of Haridas Thakur within 3 days, without fail. Easy job. No problem. So she went to his kutir at night, dressed very attractively. But she made a mistake, actually, in her program. The first mistake she made was she offered obeisance to Tulsi Devi. And the second mistake she made is she offered obeisance to Haridas Thakur. Two pure devotees of the Lord. Tulsi Devi is more than just a pure devotee. She's actually an internal potency. She's an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Tulsi is so powerful. Somehow she screwed up her program. Her strategy got mixed up. And just by offering obeisance to Tulsi Devi, this is in Anchalila described, by offering obeisance to Tulsi Devi and the spotlessly pure Nama Acharya, the pure devotee of the Lord, immediately her heart began to soften. But still she was following her program, her paradigm, her mission. She had a mission. She had an agenda. And her mission was to make him fall down. So she presented herself. She said, oh, Thakur, you're so beautifully built. You're such a great preacher. You know so many shlokas, and you're perfect in chanting mantras. I have to have a relationship with you. And because you're a saintly person, you're always kind to the poor and fallen, and I'm obviously a fallen person, and you're a kind person, so it's a perfect match. And while she was describing her strategy, she began exhibiting various postures to emphasize her points. And Haridas Thakur, he was totally cool. It was in the dead of middle of night. And neophyte brahmacharis would have ran away on the spot. The intelligent ones, the real neophyte ones would have fallen down on the spot. And the more fixed up brahmacharis would have said, sorry, I'll see you later. I have something to do. I have to distribute some books. I have to get ready for Mangalartik, sorry. And run out of the door as fast as they can. In Lilamrita, there was one pastime. One devotee. They're wearing wigs at that time. So he was distributing books, and he was distributing lots of books. And one girl said, I don't have any money, but I can pay you in another way. And he thought, because he's so innocent, it took him a few seconds to understand what was going on. This is in Lilamrita. It's in the chapter called Distributed Books, Distributed Books, Distributed Books. It's toward the end of the Lilamrita. So when he understood what was going on, he tore off his wig and bolted to the other part of the airport. That's the neophytes, and that's correct. In Bhagavad Gita, it says that the neophyte has to restrain himself from sense objects that can interfere with his progressive development of bhakti. So that's the correct activity for the neophyte, but Haridas Thakur is not a neophyte. He was real cool. He said, yes, no problem. I will surely accept you, but I've taken a vow. I have a vrata, a dritta. I'm very fixed in my vow. And she said, okay, that's cool. So I'm going to chant, and I'm going to finish very quickly. I'm expert in chanting, so just wait here and hear the chanting, and then I will fulfill all your desires. That was true, but her desires actually changed. He didn't lie. He was so expert. Everything he said was completely true, but she didn't understand what he meant. So Haridas Thakur chanted the whole night. He didn't finish that first night. And he was so humble. Haridas Thakur is the emblem of pure humility. The personification of humility. With folded hands, he said to the prostitute, he said, please forgive my offense. You saw I tried all night. I wasn't sleeping. I chanted dutifully. But I didn't finish, so come back tomorrow and I'll surely finish. She came back the next night, offered obeisance to Tulsi, offered obeisance to Haridas Thakur. That was a big mistake because she started getting really purified. And again, he chanted the whole night, didn't finish, begged her apology with folded hands. He said, I'm surely finished the third night, please come back. She came back. Actually, then she bragged. She went back to Ramchandra Khan and bragged. She said, now I've got him under control. This time he will surely fall down on the third night. And Ramchandra Khan said, let my police constable go with him, with you, to arrest him. And she said, no, first let me have union with him once, and the second time I'll bring your constable. He was so envious. This Ramchandra Khan, he had it all arranged. He had a policeman ready to arrest Haridas Thakur. Nowadays, you won't get arrested for this. You'll be glorified for having illicit sex. It just shows how times were a little different. So Haridas Thakur, the third night she came back, a little earlier it said, in Antula chapter 3. Then she again offered obeisances. During the course of hearing his pure chanting, it's described hearing the chanting of a pure devotee is so potent, it can actually turn anyone into a pure Vaishnava. So by the end of the third night, her heart had completely melted and she was feeling love of God, and she fell down at his feet, offering obeisances, saying, please forgive my offense. I came here to make you engage in abominable activities. I tried to dishonor you. And Haridas Thakur said, I knew about the whole plan right from the start. I only stayed here to deliver you. And then she said, please become my spiritual master and give me instructions how I can be elevated. Haridas Thakur gave her two instructions. The first was, Nirantara mantra lao, that means without, nirantara means without stopping. Without stopping, chant the Hare Krishna mantra. And the other instruction is render service to Tulsi Devi. Although Haridas Thakur was the emblem of renunciation, he had no material possessions. The one possession he had was a beautiful Tulsi plant on a raised platform. That was his only possession. He had nothing else. He was living in a cave or a kutir. At this occasion, it was a kutir. Later, he lived in a cave. So he said, you chant constantly. So she began. Imagine if you just joined the ashram as a new bhaktin. A brand new bhakta, a brand new bhaktin, and the bhakta leader sits you down and says, all right, your assignment is to just sit and chant constantly all day long. 192 rounds a day. That's what Haridas, and she began chanting 192 rounds. Such was his potency. By his desire, this is the power of a pure Vaishnav, as we've been hearing in so many classes. The power of a pure devotee of the Lord is such that when he desires something, Krishna has to do it. If the pure devotee begs Krishna, please make this person an advanced devotee, that person immediately becomes an advanced devotee, instantly on the spot. Such is the power of a pure devotee of the Lord. Now, Prabhupada reveals in the fourth canto, chapter 9, in a purport with Dhruva Maharaj, that Narada Muni had the power to do this when Dhruva first was there. But Prabhupada says this is not generally the duty of the spiritual master. The general procedure. Actually, Prabhupada raises the point in this purport. It's a fascinating purport in the fourth canto, chapter 9. Prabhupada says, since Narada Muni has this potency to give pure devotional service instantly, why didn't he just do it and make, you know, short work of the program? And Prabhupada says, this is not the general procedure. The general duty of the spiritual master is to engage the disciple in tapo divyam, as we heard earlier in the fifth canto. Lord Rishabdhya says, tapo divyam yena putraka. Putraka means, oh my dear sons, you have to perform tapo divyam, divine austerities, to get purified. So that's what we're doing. That's why Prabhupada gave us Bhukti Svishan, Mangal Artik, and the other things. We're engaging in tapo divyam to get purified. But sometimes, especially Lord Gauranga, he breaks all the rules. Lord Gauranga and his devotees just give ecstatic love left and right. They're handing out on a silver platter. They're handing pure devotional service of the standard of the residence of Raj. So Haridas Thakur, he gave her this instruction, you just chant in front of Tulsi. Water Tulsi Devi, offer prayers to Tulsi Devi, and chant constantly the Maha Mantra. And she accepted it. Actually, first he said, go home and distribute all your property, because all of your property was accumulated by sinful means. That was the very first instruction. Go back to your house, grab all your property and put it up for auction. Just give it away to all the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Then come back to this room and stay here forever. It says forever in the Antila chapter 3. Stay here forever and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and worship Tulsi Devi. So she was so happy. She offered dandavat obeisances to Haridas Thakur. She was so grateful. He's given the highest thing. This pure devotee has come out of nowhere. She was just an ordinary prostitute engaged by a rascal. And out of nowhere, this effulgent, pure devotional, the emblem of pure devotional chanting of the Lord's holy name just comes and gives her the highest ecstatic love of God. So she sat there. She became an acharya, and Vaishnavas came and worshipped her. She was sitting there chanting 192 rounds day and night in ecstasy and converting others. People would come and she would describe the glories of the holy name. She became practically as powerful as he. Such is the power of his devotional service. And then after that, the most amazing leela came, which I'll have to do very quickly because we're running out of time. Then when he left, this was called Benapola. It was a forest, the forest of Benapola in Bengal. So he left there and he went to Shantipur, where Advaita Acharya rented him a first-class cave. Haridas Thakur was so renounced, it was just a cave, it didn't matter, any facility. So, and again, he had a Tulsi plant, that was his only possession. And he would look at the beautiful shimmering Ganga, it's described, the silvery waves of the Ganga, when the full moon was shining on the Ganga, was such a beautiful scene, the silvery reflection of the beautiful waves of Ganga Devi. So he was just sitting there chanting his 192 rounds, and this time Maya Devi personified came. Not a mundane person of this material world, but Maya Devi personally came. And again, the same thing. She begged for relationship with him, and he was just chanting and went on for, it doesn't say how many days, but I get the impression it's more than 3 days. And finally she said, you've been cheating me. You have no intention of giving up the chanting. You have no intention of enjoying with me. You promised you would enjoy with me, but your chanting is never finished. You're cheating me. And Haridas Thakur said, I've taken a vow. How can I give up my vow? He was so humble. Whenever Haridas Thakur was chastised, he would always respond with humility and love. And then she revealed herself. She said, I am the illusory energy, Maya Devi herself, and I came to test you. Everyone else I've brought under my control, your mind alone I have failed to conquer. Now I want the holy name, initiate me into the chanting. So Haridas Thakur initiated her. Such is his potency, he has a disciple like Maya Devi. He initiated her in the chanting of the Maha Mantra, and then she went away chanting in ecstasy, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Has a beautiful ending, the story. So she, and then she was glorifying Haridas Thakur, that you are so powerful, you're such a pure soul. Your bhakti has no boundaries, it's unlimited. So just hearing this pastime about Haridas Thakur, Prabhupada said this, just hearing about Haridas Thakur gives you so much potency and power for chanting the holy name. Hearing about the Namacharya, his activities and his dedication to chanting, and there's a whole book called Harinam Chintamani. It was produced by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but it's actually a discussion between the Namacharya Haridas Thakur and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya is so humble, he's acting like the disciple. And Haridas Thakur is giving the answers. Lord Chaitanya is asking questions. What does it mean, namabhas? And Haridas Thakur describes five kinds of namabhas. And what is namaparad? And what is shudanam? Lord Chaitanya asks all these questions. And Haridas Thakur gives the answers. I'm sure Jai Jagannath, who has the book, he has everything. So you can read this book about another compendium of the glories of the holy name and the different stages of chanting. It's very relevant, the namaparad stage, the namabhas, different kinds of namabhas, no less, five kinds. And shudhanam, this is the goal, is to chant the pure holy name. So it's very valuable reading the instructions of Haridas Thakur. And of course, Haridas Thakur said, you're the Supreme Lord, I cannot speak. I'm simply an instrument. You're actually in my heart. You're actually speaking. Because he's so humble, he didn't want to give a discourse. Only when devotees ordered him, or the Lord ordered him, to give a discourse on the glories of the holy name. He was so humble. He would stay outside the meeting of all the devotees, laying down on the common road, offering dhanavat obeisances on the common road, on the dirty. He would just lay there offering obeisances and saying, I'm unqualified to be with the other devotees. And Lord Chaitanya would say, bring him here forcibly, and the devotees would carry him. They would have to carry him. Or Murari Gupta was also like that. These are the greatest, these are our role models. If you want a role model, these are the role models. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki. Gaura Premanandi.